Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coming up on 2 minutes past the hour, this is The Horn. It is Wednesday, the 11th day of December, 2013. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you will find, among other things, the Listen Live button. Of course, you're also free to listen if you've got some sort of smart device or a streaming device or an iThis or a tablet that. You're free to listen via handy little apps like TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio. Thank you, Randy and PA. Loud and clear on my Mac. Good to know. You'd be surprised how helpful little notes like that can be from time to time. Like I said, I completely screwed up Dr. Bill's broadcast yesterday. If you catch me doing that, let me know. But no, I think we threw all the right switches this time through. Hopefully. So far, so good. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you'll find entree to the chat room. Free, easy, and a pleasure to join. The room is filling up now. Jug of Punch is there. Jan's there. I'm there. Lottie's there. Sergi's there. And Sparky is there. And more will be there presently. You'll also find the PayPal button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That is how we keep all of this going. And big thanks going out to Waggy and to our buddy Scott, that's spelled R, buddy Scott, who between them took care of 2 nights worth of fundraising. So I will be fairly quiet in that regard this evening. Let's see now. It would be unfair and I think improper for me not to begin this evening's program, and we'll give the preacher the night off. I know some of you are going, oh, but it doesn't seem right to do the shtick when there is something as serious and as real as you witnessed and our dear friend Bill experienced last night. You know, Mr. Stress had an incident on air last night, having trouble with his speech. And you all recognize the warning signs of some sort of cerebral vascular incident, accident, stroke, we don't know, transient ischemic attack, hard to say. But because the Horn family is indeed a family, you all immediately began to say, you know, somebody get 911 to Bill. And somebody did. And big, big thank yous go out to Thomas and to Isaac, with whom Bill has established close friendships. He's established close friendships with many of you. Thomas is closest to him, I think, geographically. And so an ambulance did go to Bill's residence, and it did transport him to the hospital, and they did evaluate him, and they did admit him. And he is presently being treated there. Insofar as I'm not family or on any sort of list that allows them to give out information, I don't know exactly what the diagnosis is. I tried to reach him in the unit where he is a couple of times today, but he was in one instance being having a test, and in the other catching some Z's. So all I did was I left a message with a really, really pleasant, caring-sounding healthcare professional there, a nurse. Told her who I was, told her about the horn, told her how dear Bill is to the horn family, and asked that when he wakes up that she please communicate to him how many people are out there rooting for him and pulling for him, and also encouraging him to behave himself and not demand that he be immediately taken home lest he call a cab. So that's where we are with all of that. And, you know, let's put it this way. Can you imagine anyone being on the air with some right-wing gas bag long enough for anybody to be able to tell that the person has a problem? Two, can you imagine those self-important right-wing gas bags and the people who listen to those programs actually giving a good old-fashioned damn what happened to a person? Remember, the right wing is the one who, during the last presidential election pageant season, hollered for people to be left to die in hallways. No, I can't imagine it either. And that is what makes, and many of you have written, sending messages today, Facebook, email, Twitter. To say that is what makes this effort special. In particular, I mentioned that our buddy Scott was a huge help overnight. He writes, "Hi, Bob. Hi, Scott. Thanks for the horn. Like others, hearing Bill was hard. I'm also so glad the horn was there, that in whatever state of mind he was in, he turned to you as family, whereupon brothers Isaac and Thomas were there to help. That both were listening live at the time is confirmation of the sense of community and family. I kicked in during the podcast because it seems so damned obvious that the horn fills a need and deserves to continue. Finally, and well, Scott, you can't be sure about this. I got a previous email from Scott that I didn't get to last night, but had in the stack. It has to do with Scott discovering the joys of really stupid Google advertising algorithms. And he notes in his previous email, Scott does, the magnificence of the goddess of irony when she chooses to just be funny instead of mean. This has to do with the fact that Scott traveled along with his lovely wife to visit their daughter in a far-off corner of the world, even as compared to Sweden. And that along the way, and at some point in time, being a loving husband, Scott had purchased some nice lingerie for his lovely wife. This led the Google algorithm to make certain assumptions about Scott that we will leave lie. And along the way, Scott sent a link to a story about how Google and what he refers to as the other electronic Aldrich Ameses have signed a letter denouncing the NSA. Scott says, as y'all say down south, "Hoo-wee, that's a knee slapper. That's funnier than a guilt work and undercover for the Smithfields." So that's what Scott is referring to when he says, "Finally, thanks for having the wisdom not to read my last email on the air. Living in a country where a middle class thrives and is the norm, I sometimes forget that even mentioning that I could take a trip to visit my daughter abroad, or that she could even study abroad, is now out of reach for perhaps a majority of Americans. I grew up in an America where that kind of life was an expectation a young person might have because things were getting better for the majority. Or so it seemed. Today, I feel embarrassed about yesterday's email. Don't need to be embarrassed, Scott. We're not in the embarrassment business. Because it's, well, okay, if you're a teabagger, we will embarrass you, but you're not, Scott, so. But he says, today I feel embarrassed about yesterday's email because its point was about the irony of Google complaining about the NSA spying, but now I see it also had a secondary message about lost possibilities, and you had the sense not to touch it. I've had one great stroke of fortune in life, Scott says. And that was meeting Brigitte while in Kansas. And I've made one great decision in my life to marry her and follow her home. That transported me from the last embers of the New Deal in the U.S. to its more vibrant social democracy version in Sweden, where it may live on yet a while before the forces of greed succeed in the ongoing campaign to kill it here too. There, but for the luck of a chance encounter, I, too, might be another downwardly mobile American who just did everything we were told to. Bob, we know what is happening to America and why. I think you were correct yesterday about even the teabaggers sensing the collapse but failing to draw intelligent conclusions. I'm convinced of it. I've actually spent... Well, I spent a lot of time thinking about a lot of things in the last 24 hours. But sometimes we say things in the course of our conversations here that really bear further consideration and scrutiny afterwards. And I think, this does not mean I am sympathetic to their stupidity. It doesn't mean that they get a pass when they bring signs saying, if Brown won't stop Obamacare, Browning will, with a picture of a Browning rifle. Or maybe it was a pistol, I don't remember. And they manifest such pig-eyed, ignorant meanness that it's really hard to work up a really good old-fashioned give-a-damn about them. But, yeah, I mean, look, I've never really lived through an earthquake, but they say that the birds will tell you and the animals will tell you before the earthquake strikes and everything gets real still. I have lived through tornadoes. And things get real still before those, too. And you wouldn't expect to be alert to such are. It's like watching the way leaves on trees will behave right before a much-needed rain begins to fall. And so, yeah, I'm glad that Scott is in agreement. Even the teabaggers sensing the collapse but failed to draw intelligent conclusions. Because the next time the feces strike the fan blades, and they will, Wall Street is working hammer and tongs night and day, hand over fist at it, even as we speak. The next time that happens, I'm sure that the right-wingers will be there to scream out that it was that one in the White House's fault, because they're already hollering crazy-ass things like sending that one to deliver a speech in South Africa done costed us $5.5 million a minute. Is $500,000 a minute for him to be a speechifying at that funerarial? Why couldn't we just send Joe Biden? Half of them, he's sitting there taking selfie pictures with some hot Denmark lady. And there sat that Michelle over there, a-looking daggers at him. Oh, yeah, it's a full-on hissy. $500,000 a minute. Swallow a mountain, gag on a gnat. I wonder how much money the Pentagon spends on a per-minute basis. Anybody? Bueller? Not me either. But Scott continues, listening to the horn is at times very rewarding, very hard. That's why I do it. There are so many fellow hornies who are just like me, accepted in America. Things that have been fought for and won here, Sweden, are made commercial scarcities there, United States. I forget the name of the man who called about getting some cavities filled at some medical care event. That was Dave. And I'm glad they exist. But why does someone have to wait so long with a medical condition until some event appears, if it ever does? It conjures a vision to me of a medieval fair. I think of Ferg and you and other kids' chances of college and how long they may be in debt paying off college loans. That system, too, seems medieval. The graduates' first decades at work see a huge slice of income going back to some private financier behind the loan, whereas in a state that values its citizens, the college is free to those with the aptitude and desire to stick it out, and then they are free to pursue a career. Of course, here too, a large slice of income goes to taxes, but the difference is who collects it. A government largely responsible to the people and for the people's well-being, or a bank with its insatiable shareholders. In one sphere after the other in America, the rich want it all. Remember, that's our bumper sticker slogan. They want it all. Black background, white letters, periods between the words. They, all caps, want it all. Scott says they want the pension funds. They want the loan payments. They want public property. Hell, Alec even wants to tax a homeowner's use of sunlight. And we talked about that. What were they called? Free feeders, or feed burners, or moochers. The proposed Trans-Pacific and European free trade treaties would let corporate panels, not a country's legal system, overrule trade barriers, such as most of the world's negotiated bulk purchasing drug prices. Soon, everyone worldwide will pay top dollar for drugs, like they do in America. The right wing claims they fear UN one world... Because, see, I can tell when he hangs the scare quotes in front of it, I know the voices I'm supposed to use. It wouldn't work with a Swedish accent. UN one world government. But the UN promotes policies more like FDR's than Milton Friedman's. We are rapidly approaching the USA-ization of the rest of the world for corporate gain, and the neo-feudalism will be a burden too heavy to bear. Scott says, I'm bumming myself out. Or maybe it's, I'm bumming myself out. Yeah, I understand. It can be a bummer to contemplate, but by the same token, if there is even the slimmest chance of a solution to these seemingly intractable problems, it comes from knowledge and awareness, does it not? It comes when the sleeper has awakened. It comes with people who bother to learn enough about government and enough about history and enough about culture to be able to look backwards and look and then look at the present and then extrapolate forward, as Scott has done, talking about the USAization of the globe. And no, that is not a good thing. We can talk about any number of horrors transpiring on any number of continents. Let's see, what comes to mind? Oh, India's Supreme Court today declared that it's still quite illegal to be gay in India. Because there are no gay people, at least legally, on the Indian subcontinent. That's going to be rough on that somewhat, 10% of the billion people there. I mean, isn't that the number that's usually bandied about, that roughly 10% of the population in any given circumstance are gay? So in a country with more than 1 billion people, doesn't it stand to reason then that 100 million of them are gay, and the Supreme Court of that country, the world's largest democracy, just declared that they are still ill-freaking legal? Yeah, that's what I thought. You get the idea. But you see the problem. The disease is spreading. And the thing is, it has spread, like diseases often do, the disease spreads to the areas which have previously been made most vulnerable. Vulnerable by proximity, or vulnerable by previous pernicious effect. Vulnerability by proximity means that the disease passes above the Canadian border to infect a country such that it would be willing to elect, say, Stephen Harper, who has now stuck.
I claim
that, yeah, you got to really get the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Dudley Do-Right voice going for
it. I claim the North Pole in the name of Canada.
You see, and little by little, there are more and more people in Canada saying, you know, this healthcare system we have up here. Why my wife had to pay out of her own pocket for a breast augmentation in Houston. Obviously, our single-payer healthcare system is not working in Canada. The right-wing disease is catching on. Or China. China, for instance, where, despite the fact that their flag is still red and has some little golden stars on it and ostensibly claims to be communist, is an absolute capitalist wonderland of poison and pollution and oppression and death. Where the nets around the Foxconn factory bounce with the bodies of workers landing in them so that they can be safely brought down to ground, sent back to their dormitories, and back to their miserable existence, serving the needs of a Western world hungry for the next goddamn tech gadget. Or places that have been made, to whom has been transmitted our sickness via some pre-existing condition. I'm thinking Haiti, Somalia. I'm thinking the Philippines, where Typhoon Haiyan's impact will be probably a lifetime being overcome in ways both direct and indirect, because of our a certain segment of our culture's intransigence on issues related to climate change, and other people, you know, Republicans, the horrors of budget deficits that made sure that we can't send, even in the name of the good and well-being of our own flippin' Navy, we can't send hurricane tracking planes into giant storms anymore to get accurate data about what the wind speed is, or where the eye is, or how fast it's rotating, or what can be expected when it makes landfall and where. So yeah, I can bum myself out too, Scott. But again, I come back to it. If we do not, recognizing the problem, become repositories of at least considerations of solutions, we're toast. With no butter and no damn jam. I heard Dr. Bill say something in the hour prior that kind of stopped me in my tracks. It's not like I was making any tracks at the time. I was sitting still, actually, but still, even sitting that way, I sat back and he said, because he said the horn is the repository of the future of the republic. Do you ever think like that? Do you ever see our conversations, whether it be this program, Dr. Bill's program, or Rick Smith's? Do you ever see it that way? Because I afford a tremendous degree of credibility to Dr. Bill. I've known him for a very long time. I know the storehouse of knowledge that he is, and he is also a repository of tremendous wisdom. And I say this, a group of people disassociated from one another who are merely gathering together to seek some form of entertainment to pass the time, just because maybe wrestling ain't on yet, or baseball season is over, or it's a month between now and the bowl games, is never going to solve a problem. Wow, were all my analogies just sporting ones? Ooh, Bob may have a problem. But you get my point nonetheless. Only people who are engaging in conversation, dialogue, discussion, and colloquy and examination for a larger purpose of understanding the world they are in, and we are all in it for however long we are, for a brutally short period of time. The older one gets, the more brutal one understands the shortness to be. Only if we try to understand our place and then try to look at problems as we perceive them and then try to understand some level of solution, only then do we fulfill the hope that perhaps, yes, some repository of the hope of the Republic is here. In the desire to learn information and transmit information. I read Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 a very long time ago when I was a child in school. Once upon a time in Alabama public schools, they encouraged us to read things like that. Now I'm sure it's been replaced by an Ann Coulter book or maybe something from the Beckerhead. But I read Fahrenheit 451, and maybe it was because I was involved in speech and little drama efforts and things like that, that I was really touched by the image that Ray Bradbury set up of a network of people, since books were being burned by the firemen, an underground network of people who had set themselves up to be repositories of remembered texts. Oh, that guy over there, yeah, he's the first part of Henry the Fourth. She's 2 Henry IV. She's 3 Henry IV. And that guy's Henry the Fifth. Yeah, don't tell anybody the Iliad lives just down the street from you. It's a horrifying dystopian nightmare scenario that Bradbury paints, but it is also a kind of a call to action. No, I'm not asking anybody to run out and memorize Love's Labor's Lost, or The Handmaid's Tale, or Catch 22. But I do think that the level of awareness that is manifested here is on a similar level. Because you tune in, if that can be said to be what one does to get an internet broadcast, even the vocabulary is fluid at this point. But because you tune in, for instance, you know some of Bill's vast repository of learning, both within the culture in which he grew up, the art within which he worked, and the histories that matter to him. Because you tune in, you know those precious, charming little vignettes from our friend Edward in Dallas about his family from another era, both in place and time. And that's but a couple of examples. I think about the story, the account, true to life, that our buddy Jay sent about his daddy who built an airplane and how he met his mother. And that was nearly 100 years ago. You can ask Dr. John how quickly the past goes away. I think that falls within his area of expertise. We're absolutely, and I'm certainly guilty of it, fascinated with things that happened 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. And yet what remains of those times is so scant that we have to postulate and extrapolate what that world really was like. But what becomes shocking is when you find out that just figuring out what life was like 100 years ago can be damned near impossible without some sort of primary sourced direct evidence of what that world was. And in many ways, we have been gifted, for it is a gift, with an understanding of a world 100 years removed, 200 years removed, 300, 400 years removed. We have particularly Dr. Bill to thank for so much of that. I have learned more about the origins of the United States since he involved me in the PRISM program, which wrapped up many months ago now, but went on for 4 years. I've learned more about the origins of the United States and the world in which it arose than I ever did in any college class, and Lord knows in any public school class or in any reading I had done independently. And those things happen because you participate in the ongoing effort to build a community that Dr. Bill has declared to be a repository, at least in part, of the hopes of the Republic. It's pretty moving to me. Steve writes in and says, thanks so very much to the Horn family. Bob, just writing to say thank you to you and the Horn. My church is going to help me out on my rent, which feels good. My landlord went ahead and filed and served papers. I want to sincerely thank my Horn brothers and sisters for their vibes and support. Believe me, I feel the positive vibes and the love. On another note, I've been thinking about Bill a lot as I've dealt with this. I really hope he's okay. I hope he is too. And it sounds like he's in the hands of very, very caring people. The nurse to whom I spoke this evening was absolutely delighted when I told her how many people there were out there rooting for Bill. Because it means something, and any nurse can tell you, it means something when you can go in and say to the patient, my goodness gracious, I didn't know you had so many friends who cared so much. It has It has meaning and it has an impact. See what you start, Scott? But so often that's the way it is with your correspondence. This is no job. Not for me. Any more than for you, it is an entertainment. It isn't. I will leave it to you to define what it is. So, wow. 24 minutes before the hour, that's not exactly your average prayer meeting filibobster. No, no. So maybe we need to sort of bookend the beginning and thus far into the program with a little, you know, just a little pause. So we will take a break and come back and jump into the meat of things. And I have been reminded that I am remiss in giving out the email address lately. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com. And, of course, you can also reach me at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. And Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Bob Kincaid Horn on Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. So, again, a break time and a little bit of a break. And if you want to, I just need to get my head in a different place. And if you want to join into the conversation, you are, of course, more than welcome. 304-658-3333, the aforementioned Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Jump right in. The conversation's fine.
When I speak in silence, a pact can be made. A lifelong alliance, it won't be betrayed. Won't be betrayed. When I speak in silence, a pact can be made. a lifelong alliance. It won't be betrayed.
Townsend comes in so handy sometimes. Friend is a friend. Nice. Nice. Jim liked that especially. Jim just sent a note. Said, great bumper, Bob. All my heartfelt best wishes for Mr. Stress. Greatly missed tonight. Yeah. Yeah. And we trust he is in good hands. I just want to put something out there because it gave me a little giggle when I saw it earlier today. You might recall we were discussing last night the great big foo-fraw, hissy kerfuffle that the Gretch threw. She's trying to steal Festivus, the Gretch is, you know, over the satanic statue that they want to put up on Oklahoma State House grounds because Oklahoma's legislatures are so godforsaken dim, and I do mean godforsaken. I mean, if you were a god, would you want anything to do with your worshipers in Oklahoma? Me either. But anyway, I said, you know, where's the rest of the party? Where are, you know, where are... And I said, you know, where are the Jains? Where are the Muslims? Where are the Jews? Where, and I said at one point in time, where are the Hindus? By God, the Hindus have stepped up. Yes, they have. It makes me feel almost prophetic. But the tattered and frayed robe with the applique on moon and stars is at the cleaners, so I don't think it counts. But yes, it turns out, according to the official site of Rajan Zed, who is, according to the bio, an acclaimed Indo-American and Hindu statesman, who has taken up Hindu, interfaith, religion, environment, Roma, and other causes all over the world. The official site of Rajan Zed notes, Hindus interested in erecting Lord Hanuman statue in Oklahoma Capitol grounds. Good for you. The secretary filed in press releases, Hindus are also thinking of erecting a statue of Lord Hanuman if the space is available in the Oklahoma State Capitol. There ain't no space available for no Lord Handyman. There ain't no space, because this here's a Christian state. We stole it fair and square from the Indians after we moved them out here, because we done stole everything they was living on in the first place in Florida, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Kentucky, and Indiana. Damn it. The Universal Society of Hinduism is planning to apply to the Oklahoma State Capitol Preservation Commission for permission to place a statue of Lord Hanuman on the State House grounds and hopes that the commission will approve it. Now, I admit the prophecy was not completely accurate, because I had it in mind that they would put up a statue of Ganesh, because I like Ganesh. But Hanuman will do nicely. He's the monkey-faced humanoid god in the Hindu pantheon, of which there are many members. Hindu statesman Rajan Zed, who is president of Universal Society of Hinduism, in a statement in Nevada today, said that if the Oklahoma State Capitol was open to different monuments, we would love to have a statue of Lord Hanuman, who was greatly revered and worshipped and known for incredible strength and was a perfect grammarian. Well, they could use one of those. Might be a good idea to put up at least a little tiny Lord Hanuman over at Teabag Central or wherever. Rajan Zed pointed out that besides honoring the Hindus living in Oklahoma, this statue would raise awareness of Oklahomans about Hinduism, the oldest and third largest religion of the world, with about 1 billion adherents and a rich philosophical body of thought. And it is that. Of course, it is worth remembering that some of those billion adherents of Hinduism happen to live in India, where, as of today, it is still illegal to be gay. I don't know how Hanuman feels about that, or Ganesh, or Vishnu, or Krishna, or no. Rajan Zed stated that he had written to Oklahoma State Capitol Preservation Commission Chair Trait Thompson. Oh, really, his first name's Trait. I don't know how that's going to square with Hanuman and the whole grammar thing, but who the hell am I? And others for detailed procedure, required forms, conditions to be met for... Somewhere in Oklahoma, Stan, there's a fella in a cowboy hat spitting tobacco juice just beyond the points of his cowboy boots, and, damn it, all we wanted to do was put up the Ten Commandments. Hell, they're not even ours. And, of course, it does go without saying that there are probably no small number of Hindus who live in Oklahoma Stan. It's that whole dispersal of humanity across the globe concept thingy. But I was really gratified to see the Hindus stepping up. I personally, while I think the best thing of all would just be to leave the trees and the grass and... Do they have any grass left in Oklahoma, or is it all burnt up? Leave the trees and the grass and the parklands and the grounds of the state capitol alone. I think trees and grass and shrubberies and things like that look perfectly nicely without lithic adornment. If we're going to have some Ten Commandments, by Jove, I want to see Hanuman. I think if we're going to religiousize the grounds of the Oklahoma State Capitol, then by God, you ought not be able to. It ought to be an absolute forest of religious deities. Now, I mean, I understand the Muslims can't do that because it's illegal within their religion to, you know, put up a statue of Muhammad or anything, or try to make a representation of Allah. And I think the same probably goes with Judaism. So, you know, you guys can just put up something tasteful. geometric designs or something. Maybe a geometric topiary maze. I don't care. But I don't want anybody left out. That includes, as Dr. John noted last night, Shipe Totec. And my personal favorite, Huitzilopochtli. But if we do that, we're going to have Quetzalcoatl. And probably have to have some Mayan glyphs spelling out that his name down there is Kukulcan. Oh, yes. Tlaloc. You know what would really be nice? The one of the, and I'm not kidding here, it would be beautiful, because they are. One of the things that are referred to generically as totem poles from the Great Northwest and the Alaska Native cultures. My God, those things are, you know, with the whales and the seals and the fish and the beavers. And yeah, gorgeous. Gorgeous stylized art. And we put about a dozen of them on the Oklahoma State Capitol grounds. And what's funny, though, is to see where the line in the sand is going to form the line in the lawn, I guess, in Oklahoma, before the weirdos say, "That's it, all right, ah, damn it, wanted to put up the damn Ten Commandments." I said damn Ten Commandments. Forgive me, Jesus. We just wanted to put up the Ten Commandments to remind everybody to be good. Got to ruin it with their monkey gods. That's right, Jay. I'm sorry. I am. Jay says, you keep forgetting Odin. Yep. He and Thor and... Well, what about Zeus? What about Demeter? What about the Wiccans? And over all of them, taller than anything else, a giant flying spaghetti monster. Pretty soon, the state of Oklahoma would have to probably grant some sort of tax exemption because it would become a theme park. Loki. Oh, Loki? Yeah. You know, we could probably have a separate section just for the trickster gods. Loki and Coyote, as he's understood in Native culture. The goddess of irony would be nice in that section. Marty wants a statue of Kali. Irish Dave notes that the Scientologists are holding out for a statue of L. Ron Hubbard. That's E.L. Ron Hubbard. Hubbard. L. Ron. So many deities. Wouldn't it be easier just to have a deity free? I mean, you can't get that in church. I'm sure if the church wants the preacher to work 7 days a week, the preacher would be, oh, wait a minute, we're talking about preachers. You get the idea. By the way, thank you, Asa. Thank you very much. Asa helped out this evening, and it very much is a tremendous help. But you get the idea. Just like the flying spaghetti monster guy in Texas with his colander, and he said, either everybody gets to wear the stupid headgear, or nobody gets to wear the stupid headgear. I'm waiting for somebody to maybe come up with an appropriate religion that would feature Steve Martin's classic old arrow through the head thing with the wire. Yep, got to wear it in my license picture. My God won't like me very good if I don't. Oh, okay, see, the God list just goes on and on and on. Dr. John notes, also Ixtlilxochitl and Patecatl. Both are associated with healing. Ixtlilxochitl also brings peaceful sleep, and Patecatl brought us pulque, which was used as a healing tonic and to ensure safe childbirth. Appropriate for the news, I think. Absolutely, Dr. John. Pulque, also known as the drunk-making octoly, one of those things the Spanish didn't quite get their heads around early on during the conquest of New Spain. Pulque is the lowest grade of really bad rot gut ockley. Ockley, in its good form, is fresh and it's fermented maguey sap. It can be kind of viscous and sticky and drunk making. You get the idea, though. I'd forgotten completely about paticado. And yet, I think within the Mexica calendar, he's actually the patron god of my birth. Y'all can just call me Eight Knife. Ah, enough. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Your name, Bob.
Hey, Kevin. What's happening?
Oh, not much. First of all, who is the last caller last night?
That was Kathy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you never did say who it was, and she didn't say it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were seconds remaining, so I think, yeah that probably...
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, yeah, I was actually the one on hold that got disconnected, and then she got on, and I thought, well, what the heck, I can always call tomorrow. So, and I was thinking, as you were talking about all these monuments, especially talking about the Native Americans and how we stole from them, I couldn't help but think of how we named a city here in Colorado for Chivington.
I was wondering. Okay. Yeah, there's a Chivington, Colorado, isn't there?
Yes, there is. What a great person to name a town after who slaughtered people needlessly, wantonly, and deliberately. So.
Yeah, the Sand Creek Massacre.
Exactly. And for those who haven't followed that, there are people still in Colorado that are very upset that we tried to take a street here in Colorado Springs and unname it after him. They were upset. According to them, Chivington was a great hero, and I'm thinking, you're not being
by what metric?
History. Exactly.
I mean, does he deliver presents to good little girls and boys on the day of the Sand Creek Massacre? I mean, what?
Well, I think he delivers death and destruction.
Right, misery, now. Agony. Yeah.
Right, because even now those people, and by those people I mean the Native Americans, are trying to get reparations and various things to honor their dead. And you would think it would be a no-brainer to people in this day and age looking back on 150 years ago and seeing what happened and knowing history now. You know, you'd think it would be a no-brainer to try and honor the dead that were killed so needlessly by Chivington. And yet we want to name streets and cities and towns after him, so... I couldn't help but think of that, and of course, thinking also of Bill, I was very impressed that he was still in the hospital today, because the last thing I got was, I think, what you got, that he was really wanting to go home and threatening to call a cab. So, you know, I don't know if maybe that...
You can call me a cab all you want, Mr. Miller, but I'm still a nurse and you're not leaving.
Right, exactly. I'm hoping maybe that nurse got a little creative and decided to hook up the show today somehow to him.
He was asleep when I called, so.
Yeah.
Let's remember, you probably know quite well, the hospital is the last place on earth to expect to get a decent night's sleep.
Oh, yeah. The last time I was in the hospital, every 2 hours, they wanted to come in and take my blood pressure. And I'm like, for what? You know, I was in there for a foot surgery or something, and it was before the surgery. So
the last time I was in there, they had me hooked up to all of that stuff, and they would wake me up every couple of hours, and we need to take your blood. I said, what the is that machine for? Don't you have a little thing out there that'll play ding dong? The witch is dead. If I have a blood pressure problem, let me sleep.
Yeah, that, and if your heart stops, a little alarm goes off and says, you're dead, you know, and yet someone comes in and takes your blood pressure and wants to take your temperature, and of course they don't have new T temperature things that just scan your forehead. No, they want to stick it under your tongue, which means you have to wake up even more. And, yeah, it's a fun experience to be in the hospital, but I'm glad Bill's there because he had called me about 1 o'clock yesterday, I guess it was. I wasn't home. But he said that I went back and listened to that message. He found it sounded fine then. And so whatever happened, happened between that time and showtime. And I'm hoping he realizes what happened, because I think the best I can understand when something like that happens, in his mind, he was speaking perfectly good English. But when it was coming out all jumbled. And it's kind of fascinating to me how that works. And it's why, by the way, that we shouldn't treat people who we think are brain damaged beyond repair. By that I mean people who are in nursing homes, in a coma, or can't talk or speak. And I've seen this happen where people just disregard them and don't think of them as human anymore. And it's just like somewhere, just like Bill yesterday, thinking he was speaking perfectly good English.
And
cannot that person in a coma not hear you? You know?
Yeah.
You don't know for sure. And...
Well, look. I mean, I don't want to oversimplify it, Kevin. But while we have learned a great deal about the workings of the brain, we still don't know a lot more than we do, and that gives current medical science of the brain a lot more in common with a 15th century bloodletting doctor than it does with, you know, the doctor on the Enterprise 4 centuries from now.
Sure. And I think, what is it, we only use like 10-15% of the actual brain?
And I don't even know if the people who put that out there actually know that to be true either.
I know, but then when you see something fantastic happen, like a guy with superhuman strength lifts the car off someone, you know, any kind of, I'm putting it in quotes, miracle, because it isn't so much a miracle as that person has accessed that part of his brain that we know nothing, his or her brain that we know nothing about. And, you know, I will grant you, when I first got into being an EMT, I probably didn't think that much about patients who were totally speechless and appeared to be not here. Because as long as the heart's beating and the brain is functioning, i.e., you've got some sort of brainwave, we don't know what these people are hearing or thinking or feeling. And, you know, I learned very quickly, you know, try to respect them as people, I guess, is the best thing I'm saying. It's what I'm trying to say, because...
And that's something, in my understanding from folks who have gone through medical school, that is a constant challenge, is to teach medical professionals to treat people and not symptoms.
Oh, yeah. I've got this chronic pain thing that I've had for a while. I got a call last week. I was trying to get up to the University of Colorado in Denver because my medical doctor down here thought I might have a condition that's not detected by regular blood test. The doctor up there refused to see me because I didn't have a diagnosed condition. That was the whole point in trying to get up there.
And well, that's like Robert in Australia just pointed out, this is the machine that goes ping. It's the most expensive machine in the hospital. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, in that same way that you just said, doctors are, it's a constant challenge to get new doctors to treat people as people instead of a condition. It extends even this far out to doctors not wanting to treat a condition because it's an undiagnosed condition. You know, and it's just immensely frustrating. for me.
Well, and but bear in mind, you have opened the door, Kevin, to a larger conversation about, and Dr. Bill would be so proud of us, the nature of education.
Right.
Because it's not just doctors who suffer from that treating symptoms instead of the patient kind of thing. It's always a challenge with young lawyers to get them to actually see people. Well, I mean, unless they're corporate lawyers, and then they're being paid to recognize them as people. But no, lawyers who actually represent injured people, it's a challenge to get them to not see them as this little lump of rights and duties.
Right.
Or to see humanity as a lump of rights and duties. And the same thing applies to, for instance, lawyers who represent insurance companies in, say, injury cases, car wreck, medical malpractice, whatever.
Right.
And that's an educational thing, and I think it's a Western thing that this sort of linear kind of thinking that leads to a sort of Neoplatonist approach to things as archetypes as opposed to functioning people.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so doctors, lawyers. Hell, I don't know, maybe architects, dentists. Does a sculptor see a human form as merely a moving sculpture?
I don't think the good ones do.
It's said that Michelangelo literally saw blocks of stone as statues that were trapped inside excess rock.
Right. And I know that the sculptures I have seen, the good ones, you can almost capture the humanity of the person that they're building the sculpture of. You know, and whereas, yeah.
There's another perfect example, Kevin. Randy in PA just said, engineers often don't include the human factor.
Right.
And then of course there's the folks who design software and design it in such a way that anybody who understands their world would say, well, of course it works this way. And then it gets out into the world of the terrifying world of the despised user, and you find out, wow, that doesn't work at all.
You don't need to get me started on that, because especially with the accessible software that me and Bill and others have to deal with, it's nowhere near accessible. It's functional, but it's not accessible. And, you know, I don't even want to get started on that, because it's, I wrote a letter the other day to the company of the software I have, just trying to explain it to them, Bob, in a way they understand is a challenge. Because again, you're dealing with the end user, me, and the guy that built the software, i.e. them, and I'm trying to tell them, but it's doing this. And then you have no comprehension of it, because they're not the ones using it. They just designed it. And in their mind, you know, I will bet that the person that designed this particular program for me wasn't blind or wasn't disabled in any way. Because there's little things. It's not the big thing of accessing the internet that's aggravating. It's the little things like, I can't do a virus scan on my own. It will not talk to me. I have to get my person that comes in to help me cook and clean and that. I have to get her to do a virus scan for me, just to do that. And that's immensely frustrating, because if I have something that goes wrong, if I'm on the computer right now and something goes wrong,
you gotta wait.
I suspect it's the virus. I gotta wait. Yeah, exactly. And you don't ever want to wait on a virus. you know, you want to get rid of that thing like right now.
Yeah.
So.
And see, you have difficulty, and I mentioned this the other night on the program, but what you're describing are problems you have because of limitations to your sight. Well,
right.
Here I am, fully sighted, of reasonably well-functioning mind. I don't extend that one too far, but it's like what I said about the, because I dove back in, I'm trying to get registered with the Affordable Care Act application process, so I decided to phone it in today.
And how did that go?
Well, we marched on down to the point where we would enter the proper way my son's name is spelled on his Social Security card, and he said, oh, he's junior, is he? I said, no, he's the second. Two Roman numerals. Should be just one above three Roman numerals and two above IV. Well, that's not here. No, it's not. That's what I told you 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still nowhere with it. So he said, well, I suggest you go back in, completely eliminate your previous application, and go through it again. So great, I'm going to do that, but when I get down to the way that my son's name is properly spelled upon his Social Security card, that God-blessed Roman numeral 2 is still not going to be there, and I'm going to go back chasing my tail again.
What, legally, for him to be covered, what if you entered that as a word instead of the Roman numeral?
No. Doesn't work that way. What dude told me to do was just say that, yes, that is the way his name appears on the Social Security card, and have at it. And then it'll tell me to scan some proof of his identity, and away we'll go. I'd like to thank, at this point in time, I'd like to take another moment to thank those godforsaken geniuses at Booz Allen Hamilton.
Right.
For screwing up something that should have been, really, honest to, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm running off here and I'm not trying to make this about me, but really, honest to God, Dr. John wrote in the other evening and he said, you know, I'm a Roman numeral 2-2.
Right.
And, okay, I guess I may as well confess. The reason my son is not junior is for about 8 generations in my down my father's line, every junior dies young.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, every one of them, without fail.
Right.
It doesn't skip a generation. It's like 6-8 generations long. And so when Agnes insisted that we name him after me, I said, well, okay, but he ain't going to be no junior. She said, well, we'll name him the second then. Well, okay. I wanted to name him Frederick Ozias Bartram. Or Salathiel Frederick Ozias. But no, I got overruled. And so he's a Roman numeral 2, and when you get down there, there ain't no Roman numeral. What baby in a bubble at Booz Allen Hamilton doesn't know that some kids who are named after the parent get a Roman numeral 2 after that? Really?
Yeah, well, you know,
Henry the freaking second couldn't get health care coverage if we transported him from the 12th century to now because he's a
right.
Roman numeral 2?
Exactly. I'm wondering, too, why the person you talked to today at the healthcare site didn't just eliminate your and work with you on that. Was there a reason that they didn't complete it from there?
Because he could not get my application open.
Ah.
The computer wouldn't let him open it.
Amazing. But he's supposed to be there to help you with the, you know.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, no, what I thought was going to happen is we were going to fill out a paper form together.
Yep. I know here, I think it was yesterday, they were down in Pueblo. There was actually like a bookmobile type van explicitly for signing up people to the Obamacare thing. So, you know, maybe, granted, you live in a much more red state than I do, so I doubt there's that kind of thing, but I almost think you could fill it. You could request a paper form. Do they have that where you can request a paper form? I would think they would have to somewhere.
Yeah, and that's where I am now. It's going to get mailed to me.
Yeah. And then the person who's inputting it into the computer is going to run into the same thing.
Well, that's my fear. But lo and behold, the news broke today that there are now 1 million successful registrants for health care under the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And I can only presume that that is 1 million people who are not related to anybody with a Roman numeral 2 following their name.
Yep.
So, good for them.
You know, have you put that out on Facebook, Twitter? Just put out, ask if anybody signed up to it.
No, Kevin, to be fair, no, I haven't, and no, I won't. Because the wing nutosphere is already ablaze with more than enough wild paranoid fantasies. I feel bad even talking about this because I support the thing conceptually, except for the whole turning over people's health care needs to an industry that is driven solely and exclusively for profit. I mean, I'm going to do what I can to advance Representative McDermott and Senator Sanders' Medicare for All bill.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely something I will support wholeheartedly. And I'm sure the right wing will just go completely as nuts over it as...
Oh, I'm sure that's probably what Obama and Raul Castro were talking about. We're probably going to have health care on the Cuban model, which would not bother me one little bit because their model is more successful than ours.
And all over a handshake, too, as if shaking hands with somebody isn't better.
Yeah, because there was no right-wing hissy being had when Donald Rumsfeld was standing there shaking hands with Saddam Hussein and had a grin on his, Rumsfeld's face, like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Oh, no.
Right.
No hissy. No hissy when Richard Nixon shook hands with Mao Zedong, who had already been personally responsible for the deaths of God knows how many of his own countrymen in the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution. Nope, sorry, not that either.
Yep.
No right-wing hissy when George Bush kissed an Arab prince full on the mouth and went a hand-holding with him through the bluebells. Mm-mm, no hissy, but no, that one. And did you see? He bowed to him, too, Kevin. By God, he bowed to him. That's the bowingest president we've ever had since George Washington. It's a bow. The Constitution's fallen, Kevin. The Constitution's fallen. He bowed. He bowed to Raul. Of course, Barack Obama's a good 6'4", and Raul Castro's about 3'2". It's going to be hard for him not to bow.
Exactly. Yeah. And, of course, I don't know if you saw about the picture of Michelle Obama during the funeral and how...
Oh, you mean the selfie of doom?
Yeah. And how that supposedly she was mad because Barack Obama was talking to someone else's wife, and, you know, it's just amazing. These people have no class, no nothing, but they have no sense above all. I don't know if you've caught the story about the drones out here in Colorado and how...
It's legal to shoot them down now?
Well, they're going to... I don't know if the vote was actually held yet or not, but I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
Well, I'm guessing Amazon's just going to disappear that zip code from the map, and nobody will get their drone Christmas presents from Amazon.
Well, I'm waiting for someone to shoot down a private plane, you know, a Cessna, something like that. Because, yes, drones are different, but to that guy that's wanting to shoot down a drone, just like a hunter wanting to shoot down a deer, how many times have we seen a human shot instead? He's wearing an orange vest. So, you're going to see a Cessna get a rifle full in a fuselage one day, legal or not, because these people, they will not care if that ordinance does not pass.
You know, back in the Second World War, all the combatants, from time to time, I mean, it doesn't matter, the Germans, the Japanese, the Americans, the British, the Italians, whatever, their civil defense people would have to study aircraft identification charts. You know,
exactly.
That's a P-51, that's a Zero, that's an FW-190, that's a BF-110, that's a P-38. Well, so do we have to start publishing those for this little goober town in Colorado, Kevin? This is not a drone. This is not, you know, start with the 747. This is not a drone. All the way down to the Piper Cub. This is not a drone.
Right.
And just because you can't see the person in, I mean, what, are they going to set up a tower in Gooberstan, Colorado now? By the way, is that in the part of Colorado that wants to secede to, by the way?
I'm not sure where it is, but I strongly suspect it is. It's called Deer Trail, I think. So it's a little 500-person town. So I'm pretty sure it is. But even still, Bob, during war, how many times even year, 2 years back, we shot down one of our own planes by mistake. We've shot Allied planes during World War II. Remember the famous Battle of Los Angeles back in the Second World War, and I put that in quotes because they had no idea what they were shooting at. They were just shooting into the sky because they thought they saw something. So, you know, I'm really waiting. It's going to happen. I have no doubt it will happen. I just hope that no one gets hurt when it happens. You know, and of course, you very rarely walk away from a plane crash without being hurt some way or another. So, you know, but they scare me. They scare me. That's my overriding fear of these people. Now, they're so intent on using their guns to protect freedom, and we're seeing it more and more, like the woman in, I think it was Ohio, who got shot, and there's been a couple of them, both coincidentally black, but were shot walking away from the door, knocking on the door for help. And we saw the one the other day where it was a white guy got shot by a cop who emptied his clip into the guy. And there is no justice for these people because they stand on, I was in fear for my life.
I was standing my ground.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know what, I guess it's, thinking about Deer Trail, Colorado, I guess it's just as well, Kevin, that they don't have a mall there. Because, you know, there's always some guy who works the center court of the mall selling those little remote-controlled helicopters.
You might
get a bunch of teabaggers for freedom coming in with their Browning automatic rifles and, you know, just, you got to lead the you got to lead them drones a little bit, Cletus.
Yeah, I have to send out a memo to the townsfolk. Don't buy your kids any radio-controlled anything for Christmas.
Yeah, no kidding. Because some teabagger will start blazing away at it.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's such a screwed up country now. And mostly, completely, by these right-wing idiots. Like Gretchen Carlson the other day.
Henceforward, we simply call her the Gretch.
Yeah, exactly. You played that clip yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah.
I heard
little baby Jesus is behind the Festivus pole. I mean, really.
Yeah. Exactly. I heard it live, and I was just shaking my head in complete amazement that this woman was spazzing out over something that stupid. And
well, getting back to the right-wing hissy over the selfie of doom, I have only this to say. They better watch themselves because, you know, Michelle might bust out all Angela Davis, and then it's on. Because that's what they think. Yeah, they think she's radical Marxist first lady.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've had a couple people that have actually met her. They say she is the nicest person. She's about 5'1", you know, very small, petite woman, and just the nicest person. And regardless of what you feel about Barack Obama, I feel an extreme amount of disgust at the way he and her have been treated by these people.
Well, I haven't seen a hissy like this over this selfie. By the way, can I mention, Kevin, that I object to the word selfie?
And, exactly. And, yep.
Jesus, yeah. The language is dead. But I haven't seen a hissy like this over this selfie since Flush Limbaugh caught Bill Clinton smiling at the funeral of Ron Brown.
Oh, yeah.
My friends, he was laughing. It was supposedly his dear friend who had died in that plane crash, and he was laughing at the funeral. The Clintons care nothing for anyone but themselves.
Yep.
Give me another pill.
Yep. Yep. How many times have you been to a funeral of anyone? Almost, I can't think of one funeral I've been to, and I've been to thousands because I worked in the industry for a while, where people don't get together and start talking about the deceased, and invariably, you know, some good time comes up, and they smile or laugh over it. It's part of the grieving process.
Yeah, we were doing the same thing at my father's funeral up until my sister asked, I wonder, did Daddy know my Jesus? And then I had to restrain Agnes from jumping out of the pew, and it wouldn't have been good. But we were laughing again. The moment, it's human nature, Kevin.
Exactly.
And I would say that most deceased would prefer that people laughed a little bit, as opposed to sitting around crying. I know that's how I feel. You know, somebody, yeah, you know, somebody tell a little Johnny joke or something, for God's sakes. You know, R.A.T., rat, with this big. Yeah, anything, please.
Yep.
Wrecked him, damn near killed him. You know, please. Because and then, of course, there's always the classic Mary Tyler Moore episode about Chuckles the Clown.
Oh, yeah.
I showed that to Ferg one time, and he still talks about it, as well he should. It's a great moment in comic TV history, and it's a great moment in comic TV history, Kevin, because it is so absolutely an accurate representation of human nature, which is what great art should always be.
Exactly. Yeah, just like the turkey episode on the WKRP program.
Absolutely. You know what I showed. Yeah. And by the way, I found out that all the WKRP episodes are on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And Hulu is every bit as annoying to watch as regular television, with the ad breaks and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But I showed Ferg the tornado episode, in which Les Nessman takes to the air to warn the residents of Cincinnati about what to do if they see one of the godless tornadoes, because all of his emergency preparedness had to do with godless communists.
Yep. I don't remember that one, but I can imagine.
Isaac says that laughing during a funeral and taking pictures are two different things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always...
Well, I don't know what point in that process he took, or they took, that self-portrait. I don't know. Do we know whose phone it was?
I don't think so. And I didn't even know it was.
I mean, it was this while the rest of the congregation were singing "Nearer, My God, to Thee."
Now, are you talking about the picture of Michelle?
Well, somebody shot the picture of Barack taking the selfie and Michelle sitting off to one side, but I'm talking about just, you know, the president and the selfie. We don't know anything about, and whoever took the picture of them taking the picture. It gets kind of play within a play Hamlet-esque after that, but I don't know what portion of the proceedings that was.
It doesn't matter to me, because it could have been taking that picture simply to say, I was here at Nelson Mandela's funeral. He is human. We've got to acknowledge that, and in his humanness, he might have thought.
Well, do you remember when Richard B. Dick big time before he dicks you, Cheney, five deferments and walking around with some decent human being's heart in his chest? He wasn't at the time. He was still using his own revolting dying one. You remember when they, what, did he get sent to Germany or Poland or somewhere? It was a Holocaust commemoration. And so here are all these world leaders, and they're sitting out in the freezing cold, but they're in nice clothing.
Right.
Big-time five-deaf Dick was sitting there, bundled up in a military-style, fur-ruffed parka, like he had just come from Ice Station Zebra.
Yep.
Oh, well.
And there was nothing, absolutely nothing, about how Dick Cheney only cared for himself and bundled up like that when the rest of the people were freezing their rear ends off. No, nothing about him. The most.
You know, that could have been a great moment in pneumonia's history. If he just dressed like a human being, but oh well.
Yeah, we had a president die, what, 1 month after he gave his inauguration?
William Henry Harrison.
Exactly. How come it couldn't happen? History does repeat itself, you know.
Well, just remember, that's not somebody else's old heart he has. That's his new heart.
Right. And the comment was, when asked if he wanted to get in touch with the person or think about the person whose heart he got, he said that didn't matter to him. It was now his heart.
Right, that's what he said. That's not somebody else's old heart. That's my new heart.
Exactly. But the person who died in order for him to have it, there was no point in thinking about them. Now, I can't think of anything but a sociopath or a psychopath
who would say such a thing.
That emotion.
Who would say such a rotten, lousy? Yes.
Sure, it's human nature. Most people I know that have had transplants at least want to try and reach out to the person's family that they got the transplant from. A lot of times it's not allowed. But there's that emotion there.
Right, because whoever the donor heart family was is probably still sitting around going, her heart went to who?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, Dick didn't get a heart because his number just came up on the lottery list.
Exactly.
You know, he got damn good and well he got a privileged jump up to the top, just like when Steve Jobs went to Memphis to buy himself a liver.
Right. Well, just like Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush both got jumped down in going to Vietnam with their deferments and or, quote, service in the Texas Air National Guard.
There you go. But, yep.
Of course, John Kerry, he was a fast swift boat commander who supposedly ran from combat.
Yeah, I remember the Republicans showing up at the 2004 convention with their Purple Heart Band-Aids on their faces.
Oh, yeah.
Miserable bastards. Hey, Kevin, I'm going to get some more calls in, but great conversation, and thank you very kindly, and we'll keep folks updated as on Bill as we know.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to those and talk to you when I talk to you again.
All right. Take care, Kevin. Bye now.
Thank you.
Yeah, as regards Richard B., big time Dick Cheney before he dicks you and his five deferments, he says, or as the big dick says, mine, 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 as opposed to Herb Cain's 999. Mine, mine. Mine, mine, mine. Jesus, he is Emperor Palpatine. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How you doing?
I'm well, Jim. How about you?
I'm going to be real quick here. Number one, pursuant to the funeral of Ron Brown,
mm-hmm.
and the president and his remarks, I was there at the National Cathedral in April of 1996 or thereabout, and the only thing that President Clinton said pursuant to the memory of his late secretary was how well he looked, how well he wore his clothes, and what a nice-looking man he was. That's the only thing that President Clinton said, and I think it was totally appropriate.
Well, sure, but what Flush Flimball turned into a giant screaming right-wing hissy was there was some, allegedly, according to Limbaugh, there was some video footage of Clinton standing there smiling and talking and laughing with someone, and then when he realized the camera was on him, that he immediately put on his sad funeral face.
No, I was there. I watched the entire proceedings. As a matter of fact, I was seated next to the mayor of Chicago. And as a matter of fact, I even had the funeral program in my hand, and all of a sudden the mayor of Chicago just grabbed it out of my hand and signed it. And I didn't want to have Daley's signature on that thing. But I mean, you know.
Yeah, but when a Daley decides you need something, you're going to have it, Jim.
Yeah, well, I know. But I mean, I was there, and I can remember being in the National Cathedral. I had an invitation from the Democratic National Committee, and I respected the president and also the memory of the late Secretary of Commerce who went down, I think, in the Balkans or something
yes.
like that in an air crash. And,
and what you're describing there, Jim, is a perfectly accurate portrayal of the manufacturing of an absolutely bogus BS piece of right-wing outrage, which is the same thing that's going on now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, coming from Rush Limbaugh, nothing surprises me. Going back to what we were talking about earlier as far as the brain is concerned, unfortunately, what we know about the brain and its inner workings are what my first cousin, who is a neurosurgeon and neuroradiologist, said to me. And he said, what we know today about what is between the ears is comparable to that of a witch doctor in Africa 2,000 years ago. There's so much we don't know, and there are so many things that we do not understand, because that whole area of the human anatomy is basically terra incognita,
yeah.
unknown territory. So, unfortunately, I wish we knew more, but we don't.
No, the problem arises from the fact that, for instance, just from a physical standpoint, we have the ability to open the chest and watch a heart pumping blood throughout the circulatory system in the course of trying to save someone's life via heart surgery, right?
Right.
Well, it's much more difficult. I guess they do some mapping now, but it's much more difficult to understand how one neuron, one synapse fires, and how information is relayed.
Well, we're basically talking about the most sophisticated computer system ever designed by whomever. And we just aren't able to get inside that compact area of the brain and do what we need to do. I mean, we've had trepanation and things of that nature throughout the centuries. They found skulls with holes in them where people's tumors were removed and things of that nature. But medical science simply has not evolved to the point that we would like for it to, in order to restore function. And, pursuant to Mr. Stress, it is extremely hard when one is deprived of a number or any of our senses, be they visual, olfactory, gustatory, or whatever. I mean, it's really bad. And, unfortunately, when you have at one time in your life had possession of those senses and are deprived of them, it's hard going.
Yes.
And it's very hard to deal with. And particularly a person's ability to speak or something like that. I mean, the person becomes literally a prisoner within their own body. And in my opinion...
And he was speaking, he was speaking just fine earlier today, according to Tom.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad that his, visual senses speaking abilities are not impaired. But I mean, for anybody who goes through that with a stroke or any type of malfunction, whether it's an aneurysm or whatever, or whether it's a tumor, I mean, that can be pretty bad because the brain is so compact and it's so restricted. I mean, there's only so much they can do. I mean, for example, Parkinsonians, for example, they can insert sub-zero type of needle through a hole in the brain, and if they can map out the affected area, they can help with that particular situation. But it's extremely limited. And, you know,
well, what is it, Jim? Maybe 200 years? Is it even 200 years that we have had medical consensus that the brain controls everything?
Well, yeah, because the Egyptians initially, what they said, it was the heart.
But and the Chinese thought it was the liver.
Right. I mean, there were different areas of the body in which, you know, they thought were in control of your being. But nonetheless, it is the brain, but we know it's the brain. And we have only begun to scratch the surface of what is between our two ears. And
it reminds me of that old gag where the punchline of which is the guy pointing to his head and saying, "Kidneys, man, kidneys."
Well, and there are other things. You know, the human body is a marvelous machine. Unfortunately, with age, it begins to malfunction, decay, and it gets to a point where you get to a certain situation of diminishing returns. Now, each man to his own. But as far as I'm concerned, if I'm in a situation like that, I would prefer to go on and cross over and not to be left as a vegetable, because I don't think that's any kind of life at all.
That's one of those problems that is attendant upon neurological issues. You can't necessarily know you can have a stroke, and the next day be sort of okay.
Well, the clock can diminish or whatever, but I mean, you know.
We had direct experience with that here. Oh God, it was Pearl Harbor Day, 1999. I was on the road at the time, and I came home to find the house empty, and was frantic to find out where Agnes and my father and the children were. And it turned out my father had had a carotid endarterectomy about a week before, you know, where they take out your carotid artery, they clean it out, they sew it back together, and they stick it in your neck.
Well, that's just a primitive procedure right there.
That's how you treat. That was how they treat carotid blockages.
Not necessarily. They go through the femoral artery and go straight up to the carotid.
Not at that time they didn't. What happened was, Jim...
My aunt had the same problem in 73, and that's what they did with her. They just went in and literally cleaned that artery out, and they went in through one of the major, you know, arteries, and that's, they didn't take the carotid arteries from her neck. I mean, that would be trauma upon trauma. That's what they did. They went in and literally cleaned it out.
And so what happened? And so what happened is about a week after that procedure, some little tiny microscopic piece of crap that they missed broke off and decided to go up and visit some far corner of my father's brain.
Well, he
was laying in his, he was kind of reclining in his easy chair watching TV, probably Murder, She Wrote or Matlock or something. And all of a sudden, he just straightened out, stiff as flat as a pancake, stiff as a board. And Agnes, being Agnes, had enough presence of mind, being a nurse in her own right, to immediately call 911 and got help. And he had a full recovery.
Well, I'm glad he did.
And after that, that's when several friends of his and I prevailed upon him to go up to Cleveland Clinic, where they introduced him to a brand new program, experimental in nature, called the Sapphire program, in which he kind of rolled the dice, and they were either going to give him another carotid endarterectomy, or else they were going to try the new and highly experimental program of running a, what is, you know, what they typically do for heart patients, and running a catheter up from the groin up through to his carotid artery and clean out the other one.
That's what they did to my aunt in 73 in Columbia and at Richard Medical Center. That's That's incredible. But nonetheless, I mean, I'm glad we have those procedures intact and in place that can alleviate and to cure and without all the invasive procedures, because the more invasive a procedure is, the less chance a person has to survive. And that's for sure.
Right.
But, you know, there it is. There you have it. But, you know, all, like I say, all my respects go out to Dr. Stress or Mr. Stress and his recovery, and may he regain control of his faculties. He's been through a lot of stress, being having to move to another place, and that's enough to put anybody, really.
Well, that was one of the first things I thought of, Jim, is that he had been put through so much hell by those officious intermeddlers who run that building.
Right.
That they, you know, that may very well have played a part.
I'm sure it did. I mean, stress is not good for anybody, and particularly when you get older, the less you are able to handle it. And, you know, even stress at any age can be pretty bad. But nonetheless, we all live in stressful situations, and I wish him the very best. And as far as any other things are concerned, as far as, let's see. Oh, your thing with the health exchanges. May I give you some advice? If they are, or if they set the program up in such a way that it won't accept a Roman numeral 2, Paris is worth a mass. I would simply put Junior and move on with it, because the main thing, your main objective, is to get yourself covered, your son covered, and not and worry about names later.
I understand all of that, and believe you me, I did it.
So you went ahead and put Junior in there and went on with it?
Yeah, and it replicated another person onto my family.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, as long as your son is, you know, as long as you're able to get through the system, I mean, you know, like I said, Paris is worth the mass. If the system is like that, if it's programmed in that, then you have to simply, if you can't go over
but then,
go around.
But then, because it's based on identity verification through the Social Security system, it turns around and it vomits because it doesn't match his Social Security. I kid
well,
you not.
I think that in that particular case, in order to to be accepted by the system and get your son health care, which is your ultimate objective, and that is to go ahead and, you have to.
Oh, believe me, I'm not giving up. I don't have a bone. I don't have a. Anybody who really knows me well knows that I don't have a nickel's worth of give up in me, much to my, which is sometimes proven to be my bane. But, yeah, I mean, that's why I tried to do it via phone today.
Well.
Next up. Paper hard copy.
Well, good luck with it, and you know, I doubt if they're going to change their system to accommodate a Roman numeral, but I mean, you know, who knows, they might. But being with my experience with government as it is, you pretty much have to follow their guidance.
Oh, I have no doubt whatsoever that this is going to turn into an absolutely Byzantine nightmare, Jim.
Well, it isn't necessary, really. I don't think it is.
No, it isn't, but I mean, that's what it's been so far.
Well, okay.
I mean, I am not kidding you. I watched on the screen as I went from having one son to two. And, of course, I can't apply for coverage for two sons who are otherwise identical human beings. Even the system recognized that. This is that Canadian group that did the CGI and Booz Allen Hamilton, who probably screwed it up from the get-go intentionally.
Well, I don't know if they screwed it up intentionally or not. I mean, you know, it's just basically one of the flukes in the system. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I'm sure they weren't thinking of that, but nonetheless, that's just one of the, you know, unfortunately, in you're dealing with a bureaucracy and a new program that has had a very, very difficult rollout to begin with. There are certain accommodations, as well as conciliations that one has to make in order to achieve one's objective. I mean, you can either go over it, you can go under it, or you can go slap against it and get nowhere.
Well, I've tried A and B, and C, and I'm and that's first, second, and third down. So now we're going to punt and go to pens and paper.
Well, good luck.
It's kind of like it's kind of like that old story. I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but that old story about during the space race, how NASA allegedly, and it probably is just a lie, sounds very right wingy, but how NASA spent $1 million trying to invent a ballpoint pen that would write upside down in zero gravity, while the Soviets sent their cosmonauts up with pencils.
Well, it's true. But also, you had in one particular mission to the moon in which they had problems, which they had to sort of make things that they couldn't even imagine making to get those people back to Earth, to Apollo 13.
Yeah. Probably ought not have named that Apollo 13. Just jump right from 12 to 14.
Well, I mean, do I detect a note of superstition, Bob? My goodness.
Yeah, I know. It's Wednesday, Jim. What can I say?
I know. One more thing. Pursuant to spirits as far as the Indians are concerned, I have two bronze statues in my home, and I prize them very greatly. The first is appeal to the Great Spirit, and the second is the end of the trail.
Frederick Remington?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, on the gates of our family cemetery, my father, who enjoyed working with metal after he retired, made the gates for that cemetery plot, and on the gate of that plot is an outline, a perfect outline, that he did with a cutting torch, the end of the trail.
Neat. I saw the full size of that statue out in Oklahoma City once upon a time when I was a child.
Well, I'm glad you saw that. And, you know, I have the miniatures, and they've always meant a great deal to me. They meant a great deal to my dad because he always had such tremendous respect for Native Americans and the hardships, the lies, miscalculations, deliberate miscalculations.
The cruelties.
And there it is. And you know, the strange thing, I had to deal with a funeral home director today to have my own marker laid. And you know, that's an experience that you don't want to go through, but it's something you have to do if you wish to have some semblance of you left behind.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, pharaohs, you know, pharaohs at the start of their reign, the first thing they got busy on was their tomb.
Well,
and ain't none of us any pharaohs, Jim.
No, I'm not going to have any type of, I'm not going to have like Khufu have his daughters prostitute themselves to help build his tomb or anything's buried with me or whatever, because there won't be any burial there. There'll just be a marker because I'm going to be cremated. And that's fine with me because I think the whole funeral business is crazy with all this kind of stuff, but. You know, a marker is enough, just to simply say, on the bottom of it, all creatures, great and small.
Very nice. Very nice.
And on the left, the Lorraine cross, carried by Joan of Arc, the symbol of the French Resistance. And on the right-hand side will be the Federal Eagle, to which I'm entitled.
Very nice.
So good night, gentlemen.
All right, Jim, you have a good night.
Keep me on the line here. I've got a friend who's been listening to us because I've told her about you. If you don't mind, Kate, if you could just leave us on the phone for better volume, if that would be possible.
Oh, sure. Stand by. I'll just put you back on hold.
Well, listen, thank you, Bob. And listen, all my best to you and your family for a happy holiday.
Thank you, Jim.
Merry Christmas. Good New Year. Better times for all.
Amen. Take care, Jim. And let's see. Let's keep the ball rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Oh, sorry, Bob. I had you on mute.
Oh, that's okay. Jeremy?
Yeah, it's me.
Hey, what's happening?
I sent an email earlier, but I finally listened to the podcast from last night because, like I said, I tuned in late last night. And when I heard what Bill was going through, it was shocking. And when I deal with shock, I mean, no offense in this, I laugh because it's uncomfortable. I didn't think it was funny, but I didn't know what to think of it, because it was so terrifying to me that he was, like Kevin said earlier, I think he probably, in his own head, was processing what he said, but his mouth couldn't produce it because the auditory.
Well, I'll be honest. I was when I first began to hear it, I thought, and this is, I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought the phone had gone sideways or the processor was, you know, because my life is surrounded by all of this technology that occasionally doesn't work too well. And believe me, when it doesn't, I get the emails. So I thought maybe there was, but then I realized that, yeah, there was a problem. And by that time, the whole Horn family was going, 911, Bob, 911, quick, Bob, you know, you heard it.
I definitely heard it because in the minute he had one off. If he took a break for a second, he would say something which was audible for about 20 seconds, and then he'd revert back to that, which was clearly a medical emergency. There's no way around it. I mean, and in those cases, I think everybody knows that, especially with a stroke, your chances of survival are greatly increased the sooner you get to a doctor. I think this is within an hour of a stroke. Your chances of recovery and or not death are almost doubled if you see within an hour of it happening. So from the sound of it, someone said he's talking normal again today, and he wants to go home. So it's a good preliminary sign. It doesn't mean there isn't real damage done, but it's a good sign.
Yeah, and I think I speak for everyone when we say that we want him to get the treatment he needs and hopefully get a good diagnosis. And even better yet, get some sort of care that is curative and not palliative.
And at the same time, I don't think anyone on the Horn would think this. But for anyone out there that is cruel enough to think that the stress of being evicted because of an accident you had, which was an accident in the end, it wasn't anything permanently done, being that he's also, you know, hard of sight, that stress on someone like that, especially on the holidays, complicates everything already. People get down on luck on the holidays just because of what it is and the consumerism we're pushed into, where buy this, buy that, buy now, buy more, you know. And I can only imagine that helped lead to this. So to the people who have put him in this position, I'd like to give them a big F to you, because I think they greatly helped this happen.
Yeah, you mean it pushed it along?
Yes, I mean, it was. Chantar was probably there, but this didn't help any matters by having this thrown on top of this plate.
I concur, Jeremy. I don't think it's necessarily susceptible to anything we would recognize as proof. But it's just it is an object lesson in not being shitty to people just because we can or because the regs say so.
Right. And I think I know everyone in the Horn feels the same way about treating people with decent dignity. I mean, no matter what the situation is, you try to stay above the bowel line, shall we say, and keep things above board and at least give people their dignity. And the mind is an amazing thing, because I, too, was kind of curious of how that process happens, where he's probably thinking straight in his head, trying to say it, and he can hear the words that are coming out, which aren't making any sense to him either. And I wonder how that... The mind's a mysterious thing. I mean, I mentioned earlier in another email that take someone like Stephen Hawking. The man can blink his eyes, and that's how he speaks, by looking at a computer screen, basically looking at numbers and letters. But you would think that there's something terribly wrong with him, because he doesn't move anything. You don't even see him breathe. And you might think that he was mentally challenged and couldn't really do anything, but he's literally trapped in his mind. If it wasn't for that computer, that now we know he can process full thoughts. And any given one of us, he could outthink us 10 times over.
Exactly. And it's... Well, that's a credit to technology, but also to the power of his mind.
Right. Yes. And I mean, obviously, no, he's probably one of the greatest minds, if not the greatest mind alive today. But to just say, Bill, if he's out there listening, I got him in my thoughts. The most I can do from where I am, and I wish him all the luck.
Yeah. See, we just I just got a note from Asa And he says, you know, Bob, remember, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association would have us believe that Mr. Stress is possessed and we need to break out the olive oil and the holy water. He's got the demon in him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Well, everyone's buddy last night, Tim from L.A., posted something about he was having a discussion with a fundamentalist Christian. And so, of course, they were right-wing-minded, and I told him he better wash his hands because he might want to try to exercise his soul or something. But I don't know. Did you happen to catch the story that's breaking, other than texture and handshake gate, of the senator who's head of a...
Yes.
Who is looking up porn on his birth computer and, I guess, using the internet to search out male hookers?
No, apparently it's kiddie porn.
Oh, okay, that's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard it was porn, which is okay in your spare time. Maybe
upstanding, God-fearing, you know the drill, Republican, of course.
Right.
Yeah, he had a search warrant served at his home in or around D.C. this morning and was led out in custody. Chief of staff to a Republican senator.
That's going to help with the re-election campaign.
And this particular Republican senator is getting primaried by a teabagger.
So in the end, it's the greater two evils. I mean, there is no greater two evils than IT. I mean, we've seen the damage the teabaggers have no problem throwing on us. They have absolute disregard for anyone else. Unless you're trying to take their Medicaid or tell them how to spell.
Get your government hands off my Medicaid. Absolutely.
Right.
Or actually off my Medicare.
Yes, Medicare, sorry. And also, did you see the story that's breaking at the space station? One of its two cooling pumps has failed.
No.
Yeah, it just broke on CNN that one of the two cooling pumps on the station has failed.
Only two?
Which, there's only two on it, which, despite what people would think, is actually probably a really bad thing. Because even though they're in the vacuum of space, space can still be really, really hot, as well as cold.
Absolutely.
They're living in...
Very radioactive place, by the way.
It's not a place we're meant to be, honestly. I mean, we'll have to go there eventually after we destroy this planet, if we get that far out. But, they're literally living in a greenhouse in space with nothing to protect them, other than that cooling system and the thin walls, which are less than a house's thickness. So, if they lost both cooling systems, they would essentially be fried. I'm sure they have escape pods and have to leave before that, but that's not a good thing, especially when...
Sure would be nice to have a space shuttle to be able to send up, but oh well.
I was going to say, it'd be nice if we had an active space program, but now we pay the Russians to send their guys up. And
well, don't forget SpaceX. They're trying to get a private sector space industry going here because the private sector can solve all problems and maximize share profits.
And SpaceX is actually owned by the guy who owns PayPal, too.
Is it? I thought maybe it was Elon Musk.
I want to say I heard it was the guy that owns PayPal started SpaceX. Because he tried a couple different times, and only this last year he actually had success. He was ready to bail out because he lost so much money in the process. I'm almost positive it's a guy from PayPal.
Yeah, I'm looking now. No, it's Elon Musk.
It's not, it's one
of, yeah, it's Elon Musk.
Elon what?
Yeah, from Tesla.
Okay, well, there's another program that a guy from PayPal is running. The owner of PayPal. Unless that is Elon Musk, and I just keep saying that.
Yeah. All right, Jeremy, good to talk to you.
Yep.
We will roll along and look forward to hearing from you later.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. See ya.
Goodbye.
Calling from Vermont, our buddy Jeremy. And email coming in from Andy. Andy says, my friend Wayne and I heard Bill's speech mishap last night, and we're really glad you started the program this evening with an update on his condition. Andy says, Wayne suffered a stroke after an accident 4 years ago, and for a few weeks during his recovery, he was having similar difficulties to what we all heard Bill experiencing. For over a month, each evening after work and weekend days, I visited Wayne in the hospital and kept talking with him, encouraging him to get his speech and cognition back. He's quite fortunate to have made a full recovery, as we hope Bill does as well. We're glad Bill got immediate assistance and would like to encourage him to recover as best he can before he tries to go back home. I can't count the number of times during Wayne's recovery that he'd tell me, well, I'm going back to work tomorrow, even while struggling to remember where and when he was and which words went with which objects. Andy continues, I thought your comparison of Bill to the characters in Fahrenheit 451 was very apt. People who have bothered to learn as much about how the world actually works as Bill has seem to be getting more and more scarce. Wayne and I both hope he'll do what he needs to do to take care of himself so he can recover and keep sharing his wit and his wisdom. And by the way, Andy continues, on a slightly different topic, about the healthcare.gov website issue. Even as a programmer myself, it amazes me how often stupid issues get overlooked. As one example, last year I was using a GPS app that insisted that a street near me was called simply Avenue. No name, no number, just Avenue. There's this really novel concept called the testing phase of development, which is a super arcane process in which feedback from a shadowy, mysterious group known as end users is supposed to be used to modify a database or a program to make it easier to use and eliminate errors. In the world of for-profit software development, however, such radical notions as minimizing errors usually just get in the way of what's really important, maximizing profit. Yeah, and not to put too fine a point on it, I know, like I said before, I know for a fact that there are at least two human beings in the United States who have the Roman numeral 2 after their last name, and the geniuses in the private sector to whom we farmed out the creation of this website, you know, because, well, we couldn't have any civil servants with sworn loyalty to the United States do it. That's just it's crazy talk. Well, they weren't aware of the Roman numeral 2. I mean, I don't sign anything senior. I just, you know, and only when I'm feeling really, really ostentatious do I sign my name with a Roman numeral I, you know, the first. Jesus. Senior, junior, 3, 4. By the way, Thurston Howell V, you're out of luck too, Buster. And Andy closes saying, anyway, as I said, best wishes to Bill and all the rest of the Horn family commune as well. Thanks for the note. Thanks for the note, Andy. Tamara writing from San Diego, Affordable Care Act. So much for California having a working website. I've been trying to sign up as I listen to the show. Every time I get to the tax information page, I can't complete it without getting an error message. An error message with a typo in it, no less. LOL. The world needs people who are into the art of word knowing. I'm not kidding. Navy promotes officer who molested child in lieu of investigation. I rest my case. About 9 minutes past the hour, lines open 304-658-3333 on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Jace Cruzan?
Hey, what's happening, Jace?
Oh, not a lot. How are you doing?
Getting through. Pulling through, like Mark Twain said.
Pulling through, like Mark Twain said. Okay, yeah, well, I'm just kind of hanging out myself. I just called in pretty much to say hi, and glad to hear that Bill is getting his medical attention that he needed.
Yeah, and none of that would have happened without quick and decisive action by, members of the Horn family. So.
Oh yeah, I freaking stopped what I was doing. I was at work.
Oh, I was freaking out, Jason.
That was like 30 seconds into your phone call. I was like, wait a minute, and I was driving my truck from one trouble call to the next, and I said, wait a minute, this isn't right, because I was listening to you on the radio, and I freaking just pulled off to the side of the road, and I just went onto the chat room as quick as I could, and said, hey, look, it sounds like this guy's having a stroke. And I was like, I was so glad to see that everybody in there was already having a lot of concerns and stuff. That was great.
Yeah, people picked up really quickly, and that was a tremendous help to me, because I was kind of lost. Like I said, my first assumption was that once again telephony had failed us, because I'm just used to defaulting to the position of, you know, I've screwed something up technically. So it took.
Actually, for the first couple times he said something, it sounded like it was kind of like a pre-recorded playback, and I was like, "Wait a minute, something's not right here." So, you know, I wanted to get involved, and everybody else got involved, and you know, all right, it's great, and everything's working out good, and he's getting some care, so that's great. So, what else you got going on, Bob? What's up now?
Well, you know, it's Wednesday night, and we've got all kinds of Wednesday night fun out there. Let's see. Earlier I mentioned the fact that the Hindus have jumped in to decide to the great race to put a statue on the lawn of the Oklahoma State Capitol. You know that story, of course, because the Satanists want to put their Satanist monument next to the Ten Commandments, and you know, I say fine. And last night I said, be nice if some of the other religions would get involved. And it's kind of neat when we have those moments on the program, and then some day, 2-3 days later, we find out, well, look, it happened. Well, it happened with the Hindus. And you've probably listened enough to know that I say that the First Amendment has become little more than a life support system for the religion industry, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the lifeblood of the Christians.
Yeah, and you know, if we don't want them to force their religions on us, we don't have that right. They, on the other hand, have the absolute right to compel us to even craft our laws in accordance with their weird religious beliefs. Witness the fact that Hobby Lobby now wants to be treated as a religious person, as a corporation.
Well, absolutely, and I'll go to you on another one of those, is that when we have our freaking safety meetings at work, we stand up and we say the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever, I stand up, and you know what, I don't even say it, because there's one nation, indivisible, under God, and you know what, sorry, I ain't saying it.
Right, because it's certainly not the same thing that was originally promulgated by, here's a fun one for you, by a Baptist minister from Massachusetts in the late 19th century who was also a socialist.
Oh, yeah.
Because back then it said, I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And that's the way it should still be.
Yeah.
I can't even stand up and say it in safety meetings anymore at work, because they put that under God in there, and I just whatever.
Well, the whole what I was getting at is that Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzupistan, has now declared that the First Amendment applies only to Christians.
Yeah, I heard that earlier. I was like,
Further proving my point that we can view the First Amendment as nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry.
Yeah, but that's so backwards of what it was designed to be.
Well, I've got the clip. I'll play it in a little bit, and you'll probably run screaming around the room, Jason. Because I did. I know I did the first time that I heard it.
Well, I'm sure I will. But most of the founders were deists.
No, according to Brian Fisher, they were fundamentalist Christians just like him.
Yeah, right. Okay.
In this clip, he says, at the time the Constitution was written, 99.8% of America was Christians. The other 0.2% were Jews, and the slaves and the native peoples who had been here for 15,000 years beforehand, well, they just don't count, do they?
Well, they don't count, and plus the other people like Thomas Jefferson that were deists, they were not Christians. I mean, I guess they don't count either. Thomas Jefferson doesn't count.
Oh no, you get to if you're a fundamentalist Christian, Jason, you get to completely rewrite history, or not even rewrite it. You get to reimagine it because everything that they do is a function not of their intellect but of their imagination. Right?
Yeah,
you disagree?
I get that all the time, bro. No, not at all. I get that all the time.
So,
I'll tell you what, and I'm the one that sends you those freaking nasty-ass, bloody Bible quotes all the time. And they're messed up.
Yeah, it's because it comes from a pretty messed up book, but we know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But we got that going on. I mean, something that I had not brought up, but has been sort of rolling, been sitting in the stacks for a few days, that probably does deserve mention, and you having been here to almost level West Virginia some years back, might have some sympathy for this. It turns out that here in almost level West by God, the government that ostensibly represents me and about 1.5 million other people has declared that our landfills are now open for business to accept unlimited amounts of what is described over at Think Progress as often radioactive fracking waste.
You gotta be kidding.
Charming, no?
So they're going to knock the tops off the mountains and then they're going to fill them in with fracking waste?
No. These are our landfills. This is like where we send our garbage. For instance, our household garbage has to travel 35 miles to get put in a landfill. That's why we try to keep as much out of it as we possibly can.
Okay.
You know, things like banana peels and things like that just get dumped in a corner of the yard to sort of do what nature does with that sort of thing. But, so in addition to the stuff that ordinarily goes into our landfills here, we are now going to put the waste, which is often radioactive, from fracking operations in the landfills too. And here's the best part, Jason. It's not just from fracking in West Virginia. It's from fracking wherever they want to send it to us from, because, well, West Virginia has become the dumping ground for the hydrocarbon energy industry. Well, let's dump it on West Virginia. They're already poisoned, right?
No, I want to say wait a goddamn minute, because West Virginia is a beautiful place. I have been there. I've been up and down and through those mountains and everything. Even though it's a hell to work in as a lineman, that is a hell of a beautiful place. Why? Who is doing this? And
yeah,
how,
see, you're
right.
You're experiencing a little bit of my life right now, where you're kind of rendered speechless by the meanness and stupidity of it all, right?
Yeah, because in my opinion, the entire state of West Virginia should be turned into a national park, because it's so freaking beautiful. It's so wide open. It's so unexplored. It's untouched by human hands in a lot of places. Except for the mountaintop removals and all that shit that's been going on since I've been there last time. But what in the hell are you talking about?
Well, see, there was another thing. Yes. And it's not like we're going to put them in lead-lined barrels or bury them in concrete vaults. It's just going into the stuff's just going to go into the landfill alongside, alongside the Jones family's bag full of their two-year-old's disposable diapers and the soup cans and the packages from the lunch meat and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, that's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to, Bob, is your state. Even though I hated it working-wise, it was so freaking beautiful. And now they're so everybody's going to get to dump all their crap there?
Uh-huh.
How does this come about?
Because America needs jobs.
Yeah, but who's doing this? Where is the dumping and how is it being authorized?
Well, it's any landfill in the state of West Virginia.
Okay.
And it's being authorized through a modification of an existing rule through the DEP. The Beckley newspaper story says the new rules in West Virginia announced to landfill owners in a July 26th memo from the state's Department of Environmental Protection are further proof of the boom in drilling on the Marcellus Shale, a resource-rich rock formation running under Pennsylvania, Ohio, and parts of West Virginia, not to mention New York, that has become one of the most productive gas drilling fields in the world thanks to fracking technology. That's the way they write over there at the Beckley Rag Herald. The extractive industry can do no wrong. So basically what it boils down to is that these are called drill cuttings. In other words, when you drill down a mile into the Earth's crust and then you drill another mile sideways, well, that stuff doesn't just burn up at the tip of the drill bit, right? It feeds back up out of the hole. And so you've got the particulate matter, the solids, and you got water, and you've got the fluids that they use for fracking itself, and all these things sort of mix together in a toxic stew, and we're going to put it in the landfill.
Let's talk about the toxic stew for a minute there. That toxic stew is a lot of the crap that are byproducts from petroleum refining.
Sure.
They use all the leftover crap that they have refined petroleum from, and they turn it into a damn they turn it into that toxic stew that you're talking about. All those chemicals that they use to refine oil into gasoline, the benzene and all that other crap, and they put it in this big mesh of fluids and they push it down into the earth to frack. And you're saying that this crap, when it comes back up, they're going to dump it in your state?
Yeah, in our landfills. Okay, now, I misspoke a little bit, Jason. It turns out that if you want to dump drill cuttings in the landfill, you have to have a separate cell for the drill cuttings. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to leach. It doesn't mean that it's not going to leak. It doesn't. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it doesn't mean anything.
And it is, yes, radioactive. It turns out, according to the United States Geological Survey, Jason, that the Marcellus Shale formation has higher levels of naturally occurring radioactivity than other shale formations.
Now you're just going to put it in landfills?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see. Here's a good example. Wetzel County shares a common border with southwestern Pennsylvania.
Huh.
And the landfill in Wetzel County at one time was authorized to accept only 9,999 tons of solid waste each month. That's just solid waste, period. Okay?
Yeah.
So in October, it took in more than 40,000 tons, of drill cuttings. 75% of that 40,000 tons extra was from drill cuttings. Radioactive, toxic drill cuttings.
So you're saying that this is crap that comes back up after the drilling from the fracking operations and it's actually radioactive and they're dumping it into your landfills.
Bingo. But we can all rest easily, Jason, because Ryan Inch, who is the director of engineering at the Wetzel landfill, says that he believes, and there's that dangerous word again, he believes the concerns about radiation are a non-issue. So we can all rest easily because Ryan Inch believes that.
Holy moly. You know, Bob, I don't even know what to say about that.
You know, only, and he went on and added that only one of 2,500 truckloads of drill cuttings, that's 2,500, and by trucks we don't mean, Jim Bob's Toyota pickup down the road there. We mean, you know, big-ass dump trucks, or big-ass trucks.
And when you're talking about a big-ass dump truck, let everybody know that we're not talking about a regular dump truck. We're talking about a dump truck that's like as long as an 18-wheeler.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a dump bed on it.
And he said people need to just chill because only one of the 2,500 truckloads of drill cuttings that they dumped in Wetzel County, only one of them triggered the Geiger counter. Just one.
But they're bringing this stuff from other states, though.
Yes.
Why is your state allowing that?
Well, Bill Hughes is chairman of the Wetzel County Solid Waste Authority, and he said, landfills have never seen a ton of waste they don't want to take. Our state just sort of trusts the garbage guys. Meanwhile, here's the response from Corky DeMarco.
So in other words, he's saying, just go ahead, guys, dig it up, and we'll take it.
That's what the garbage...
Because, remember... We'll take it.
Yeah, because, see, like, for instance, the Wetzel County Solid Waste Authority opposes this, and they are a governmental... They're an arm of local county government, all right? All of these landfills are operated for profit by private entities. For instance, the outfit that runs Wetzel County also runs three other landfills that are owned by a company called J.P. Mascaro and Sons of Audubon, Pennsylvania. They're for profit. There's big money in garbage.
Okay, well, let's get down to the personal aspect of this, Bob. Once they dump this crap in these landfills, what kind of protection is there from them dumping it where they're dumping it and it flowing into, like, people's water?
None.
None. People's water, people's land.
I mean, theoretically, these landfills are supposed to be engineered in such a way as, you know, so that the landfill won't leak.
Okay, but what about all the rain and all the water runoff?
Interesting you would bring that up because this is, after all, a temperate rainforest, what's left of it.
Yeah, it really is because it's really wet up there. I've been there.
That's why I was asking you the other night what your favorite brand of please God don't let my feet get cold and wet boots are for when you're working. Yeah, it's wet up here.
It's wet. You're freaking in the wintertime and you go from down in Beckley and you go up into the mountains and instead of the mist being in the air, there's just snow falling everywhere. It gets cold as hell up there.
Yes, it does. It's going to be doing that this evening.
And the moisture just comes down.
Right, I don't want to give away anything, but you work among things that are strung on poles, and you know one of the curses, I mean, a lot of people, especially if they're not from this region, Jason, they think of snow like that lovely, white, fluffy, powdery stuff that comes down in the Rockies that is really awesome to ski on. The snow that we get is wet, heavy, and sloppy, and frequently mixed with ice. And it makes things like transmission lines snap like twigs.
Yeah.
I mean, we are in the midst. We're in the midst of one of those wet, sloppy snows just two nights ago. I mean, it's heavy, heavy. You know, trees come down, branches break, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I've been there, man. I've been in such bad conditions that I'd be working on lines, putting them back up, and I'd be wearing my rubber gloves, and inside the gloves would be frozen because the freezing rain is still coming down. And it's like your hands start to freeze inside the gloves because the water runs in as you work over your head, and then you got to go under your head, and then the water runs in, and it just freezes inside your gloves and shit.
That's us. But the thing is, like you say, even in the snow scenes in the Appalachians are absolutely beautiful. So consequently, on Sunday, Ferg and I decided we would take a walk there. Not far from here, there's an old narrow gauge railroad track that's been turned into a walking trail that goes from my little town all the way down into the New River Gorge. It's a couple of hundred million years worth of geology that you walk past on the way. And I thought, well, you know, we'll go and we'll take some pictures of the snow. And we got a couple of lovely ones, but it wasn't very long at all before he was looking at me and I was looking at him, and we were going, let's go home. We're really, really cold, and our feet and my feet. And I said, my feet are wet, and that means game over. And, you know.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, if you got to go out, you got to go out. And so.
Yeah.
Cold is cold.
Yeah, the most important time. The most important thing is, though, remember the time. Don't remember the pictures. Don't even look at the pictures. Take those pictures and just put them somewhere else. Don't even look at them. What you need to do is remember the time. The time you spent with your loved one there.
Yep.
Because it's a huge difference. Once you start looking at the pictures, all you're going to remember is the pictures.
Yeah, I get your meaning.
And there was something on another program that I'm not going to mention that was talking about that earlier today, and I really got that meaning of that is when you're out and you're doing things, and you're watching your family, and you're having fun, and you're in, you know, I mean. This may not be fun for you, but whatever. Whenever you're out and doing things, remember what you're doing, and try to remember minute to minute what's going on and all that. And once you take a picture, the horrible thing is that once you take that picture and you look at that picture, that's all you're going to remember.
Well, for my purpose, the main reason for me to take that photo was to send it around to some folks just so that they could see where it is I'm talking about when I'm talking about it.
Yeah, but like, let me ask you a question, Bob. Think about your dad right now.
Yep.
Okay. Remember him in one certain point in time. What do you see?
I see my dad.
Do you see a picture that was taken of him? Or
No. I see the image that was gathered into my mind.
What do you think about first, though? Do you have pictures of him?
Sure. I've got pictures of him from long before I was ever born.
Okay. Well, pictures of you and him together. What do you see first when you actually think about your dad? When you say, okay, I'm going to think about my dad.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily see Jason. I hear. I'm that's part of the reason I think I'm in radio is I'm very auditory. I hear his laugh.
Well,
I hear his voice.
That's a very good thing. There's a lot of people that don't realize that once you take that picture, and once you take that picture and you immortalize that one minute or second in that picture, then that's all you see. Because a lot of times when you go out and when you do things, you probably shouldn't take pictures. You should probably just let your memory flow and remember all those.
Yeah, I'm a lot more prone not to take them than to take them, which has engendered no small amount of, of, Bob, why didn't you take some pictures while you were doing it? Well, I was busy. I was busy doing what I was doing.
But when you were busy doing what you were doing, you remember those
absolute
things in your head a lot better. But if you take a picture, then that's pretty much all you remember. And then you're frozen in that one second. And I actually just came to realize that today when somebody else was talking about it on the radio. It's pretty weird, but it's true.
Yeah, I think, you're talking about the artificiality of it.
Yeah, because once you take that picture and you go back and you look at that picture, and then that becomes what you remember the most. But there was a whole lot of stuff that went on back and forth in between before and after when you took that picture that you might want to remember a hell of a lot more than what you did.
Indeed, and the detail, and that's where things like writing come in, or storytelling, stuff like that.
Storytelling, well, mental pictures, mental, you know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. In the chat room just now, Sparky said, "My dad is in the living room watching Fox." That's a picture. That's a mental image. And which called to mind my thinking, my dad in the living room, not watching Fox. Oh, Jesus, he hated it. God, he just...
he hated
Bill O'Reilly. Oh, my God.
But, like, when I think about my kids, and I'm not with them a lot, I think about them watching Connor or Garrett playing T-ball, or Connor playing baseball. I can actually see them doing that, but once that picture's taken and I start looking at that picture, then that's all I kind of remember. So I think actually a lot of picture taking is actually it does a harm to your memory. I don't know if you may understand that.
No, I understand. I think we can, if we want to create an analogy with that, we can talk about the differences in the human mind in pre-literate societies versus the changes that occurred in the human mind after writing was invented.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Jason, I'm going to roll on because we got a couple of lines stacked up here. But it's been good talking to you, I will transmit your poem over to be transmitted in turn to Bill.
All right, thanks, sir. Bye.
You have a good one. Take care. It's our buddy Jason calling. And let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Edward.
Hey, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Pipes still okay?
I beg your pardon?
Pipes are still okay?
Yeah.
Got through the big freeze?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got through it. And it's thawed out now, thank goodness. But I wanted to tell you I was so glad that our friend in Cleveland is doing well.
Yeah, I'm glad he... didn't sleep real well last night.
Well, it bothered me, too, because I have been through things like that, and it sort of wipes you out. Well, anyway, I wanted to tell you... we had some more earthquakes over west of Fort Worth and north of Mineral Wells, close to Azle. And they're getting closer and closer to Dallas.
Well, sooner or later, they'll figure out a way to frack Dallas, too, and then...
Oh, yeah. Of course. I know. I know they will. Absolutely. Oh, and Oklahoma and all their carryings on.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been in Oklahoma City in, oh, my God, it's 30 years or more. But, you know, when I the last time I was there, they have oil wells on the lawn of the state capitol.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they're not fracking the state capitol now, too.
They probably are. Those Oklahomans, I mean, you better watch them. They'll frack you.
Frack you good.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if maybe they might put up a fracking well next to the Ten Commandments monument there.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That would be apropos, don't you
think? I mean, if you really want to honor the true deity of most of those right-wingers in Oklahoma, nothing says it better than a derrick, does it?
You're telling me. Oh, Lord. In my younger years, I lived in Kansas, and my step-granddad was a pumper, and he was the one that took care of the oil wells, and these were... Those oil wells with humongous derricks on them, but this was up in Kansas, and I've never forgotten that as long as I live. I used to play among the oil wells.
Dear Lord.
I didn't come down with some sort of dire malady or something.
Well, considering the time, it is. But then again, maybe. I mean, you weren't splashing in puddles of crude, were you, Edward?
Just about that. Because they had these slush pools and stuff. Oh, my God, what a stench.
Oh, no kidding. So you get an idea why maybe we're not so happy here in West Virginia about the idea of a bunch of fracking waste being dumped in our landfills.
I know exactly what you're thinking.
My neighbors right now, I should mention, and, you know, it's funny, I never noticed it in other winters, but mm-hmm. this winter it seems to be particularly profound. Maybe there's more people doing it. But my neighbors have fired up the coal stoves, apparently, because that sickening, cloying, sweet smell of burning coal is, well, here in the studio now, it's disgusting, sick-making,
well,
headache-inducing.
Let me tell you, I grew up in my with my grandmother and grandfather, and they had started out with fireplaces before that, and... there were like about five fireplaces in the house. Anyway, then they went to coal. And that was one of my jobs I had to do, was fill up all the coal buckets. And I had a little wagon, and I'd go out to the coal bin, and I'd fill it up and take it back to the back porch. But, you know, I did find some rather interesting things. Sometimes these big lumps of coal would come apart, and there would be the most beautiful leaf in there.
Yep, ferns.
Yep, I know.
Because the era from which coal comes, well, coal is basically made out of those ferns, and they were giant ferns. I mean, they were ferns the size of freaking palm trees and so forth.
Oh, yeah, they were ferns.
And
trees.
They would fall over in the swamp. And it was an anaerobic environment, so they wouldn't necessarily rot, and instead they compressed into, boy, this is a real cheap version of geology, but that's where you wind up with coal beds.
Yep.
And coal bed methane and things like that, because all of, you know, everything that was central Appalachia was once a very, very shallow swamp.
That's right. Well, this too, burning the coal in the what used to be the fireplace. We had the big pot-bellied stoves with all the, you know, the chrome on it and all that stuff. But you'd get a lot of soot in your chimney. And I was out in the backyard one evening, and all of a sudden, one of the chimneys went, whoo, and this flame just shot into the air. Scared me half to death. The soot caught on fire.
So I have to ask, if you were dealing with a coal stove, I have to ask you, I have a vocabulary word here. Are you familiar with the term clinkers?
You're telling me. I know what a clinker is. I had to get rid of them.
Yep, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sure do. Well, anyway, I'll let you go by. I know that you're a lover of W.C. Fields.
Oh, yes.
And so was my daddy. My daddy loved W.C. Fields. And you've probably heard this before, but it's one of my favorites. W.C. Fields was not well. He was ill. And his friend drove up the street there in Hollywood past W.C. Fields' house, and he saw him sitting on the porch. So he pulls in the driveway, goes up there, goes around the corner, and there's W.C. sitting there with a little lap robe over his knees, reading the Bible. And his friend says, W.C. Fields, what are you doing reading the Bible, you old atheist? And Fields looks at him and says, I'm looking for a loophole.
Looking for a loophole. I love that. Yeah.
My daddy told me that. We're just laughing.
Reminds me of the time we were in Afghanistan. We'd lost our corkscrew. We were forced to live for 2 weeks on nothing but food and water. Yeah. Well, I love him.
I love it.
My favorite film of his is The Bank Day. I mean, there are other good ones, but I think that's the... that's the gold standard.
Oh, yes. I love them all. Well, take care.
You have a good evening, and stay warm and safe, Edward.
Well, it's warmed up a little bit. Oh, I was going to tell you, I have some friends here in Dallas. They, they're sisters, Molly and Sally. And Molly is a retired school teacher in Alaska, so she has to spend at least 6 months a year in Alaska. To get that money, you know, that they have, from the oil money. Anyway, they go to Alaska and spend the summer, and then they come to Dallas to spend the winter. And they had friends call them and said, do you know Dallas is colder than Anchorage?
I don't doubt it. That had to be just an upside-down rude awakening. So just out of curiosity, what is it now in Dallas, Edward? I mean,
well, it's close to, about 30 or something.
Tolerable, but yeah.
Tolerable, yes.
You don't have to drip the faucets tonight, I don't
think. No, we've been doing that. But I couldn't believe that when I talked to Sally and Molly, and they told me that Anchorage was warmer than Dallas. I just flipped out.
Well, and I think we're going to see more of that.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's called climate change.
Precisely. Edward, have a wonderful evening.
Well, you do too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our dear friend Edward, calling from Dallas, which is at present not frozen. Mercifully, but is becoming the land of the shakes. And that's S-H-A-K-E-S. That was actually once upon a time the term that was used for West Tennessee back along about the time that David Crockett moved in there. It was kind of earthquakey. And, yeah, Texas Betsy pointing out, as you well know from your studio, 30 degrees is no fun when homes are not insulated and no one owns proper clothing. I think what she's doing with that is alluding to the fact that there in Austin, Texas Betsy, while having a home that is brilliantly solar heated, it is not particularly well insulated. She also notes, my school is over one-third portables and 8 connecting wings with an outdoor courtyard as hallways. Well, that outdoor courtyard must be a lot of fun. But the idea that there are more earthquakes out to the west of Fort Worth, somewhere near Mineral Wells. We've got a Mineral Wells, West Virginia, too, by the way. Those are not, shall we say, naturally occurring. Irish Dave with an inquiry. Appalachia was once a shallow swamp. How did the Titanic sink there then? Right, the Titanic plates. Yeah, right there in between a couple of coal beds. There's a little imprint of a fork, and it says Cunard Line on it. Yeah. Irish Dave is irrepressible, to say the very least. So I did want to share with you the glad tidings of great joy, which shall be to all fundies. Namely, I wanted to share with you Brian Fisher's audio that I discussed with Jason a little bit ago. Because it really is one of those hear-it-to-believe-it kind of things. And here we are on prayer meeting Wednesday, and it just seems like it wouldn't be quite right otherwise. At which point in time, my production machine running Windows 8.1 for landfills, speaking of landfills, has decided not to cooperate, so we may or may not get the audio from Brian Fisher, damn it. But that doesn't mean that there isn't other stuff that we can go to. It's kind of like cheating, depending on these teabaggers. Or not depending on them, dealing with them. Wait, is it going to cooperate? Could it be? Is it possible? I'm not betting on it. No, who was it that put me on to... Oh, thank you very much, Sal. Sal, thank you for helping out this evening. That is tremendously helpful. Sal is there every evening, and it makes a tremendous difference. I'm looking through my email here for who it was that sent me this link to this one particular bizarro world website called, of all things, The Godfather. No, I'm sorry, Godfather Politics. Not Godfather Pizza. 999. But Godfather Politics. As far as I can tell, let's see, Godfather Politics motto is, it's not personal, it's politics. Haha, get it? It was only business. Yes, this genius is lauding the fact, headline, South Carolina about to nullify Obamacare. And this is I couldn't resist. I had to comment. Shame on me. Would you believe, says the writer of this blog, would you believe that there is one state out of 50 that has the fortitude to exercise their 10th Amendment rights? Okay. South Carolina Republicans are on the verge of passing a bill that would completely nullify every aspect of the Affordable Care Act in their state, known as H. 3101. The bill prohibits any and all agents, officials, or employees of the state of South Carolina from implementing any provision that is part of Obamacare. It also allows for the issuing of a state tax deduction equal to the tax penalty enacted by the IRS and makes the state exchanges illegal. They are also considering two additional provisions that would make the Medicare expansion illegal and the suspension of state insurance licenses of any insurer that received federal subsidies through Obamacare. You guys are serious. So it turns out this dumbass bill has passed the South Carolina Stan House back in April by 65-34. It's on its way like poop through a goose through the Senate of the state of South Carolina and is expected to be signed into law by Governor Nikki Haley, which it really isn't her name, but that's okay. Apparently a lot of people go by aliases in the state of South Carolina, Stan. Joe, not named Joe Wilson, that kind of thing. You lie! And so they're going to nullify Obamacare because, you know, that last experiment they had with nullification worked out so well. Did they finally get all the fires put out in Charleston from their last nullification party? Yeah. I still don't understand why they want to fly the Confederate battle flag at the state capitol, when in fact the last flag the Confederacy flew was solid white. Jim noting, South Carolina, yes they can. Heard from one cousin tonight. Oh my God, Jim. What's really funny is they're going to give a tax credit to anybody who gets penalized by the IRS for not having health insurance, which doesn't make a damn bit of difference if you're poor and you couldn't afford, and you would have been eligible for Medicaid in the first place, and you get the penalty imposed on you by the IRS, and you don't have the money to pay it. Well, the tax credit's not going to do you a goddamn bit of good either, because you're still too broke. Genius. Absolute genius. Then this note in from Randy. I know you're trying to be kind, but you really shouldn't stop fundraising just because you're ahead. That's partly how you often get to be in the hole. Point taken, Randy. Point taken. So, yes, Randy notes that we should continue to fundraise even though we got a little bit out front. Thank you, Randy. And by the way, he says there are only 4 minutes left in the program. Au contraire, mi amigo. There are only 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in the program. So with that, I will thank you all for your kind and solicitous attention this evening. Thanks for all the good wishes. Hey, there's an idea. Texas Betsy pointing out, you know, you could have a fundraising free hour every time we get ahead. That's a thought. Remind me of that, Betsy. Remind me. But thanks to all of you who make all of this happen. Thank you to our buddy Scott. Thank you to Waggy. Thank you to Asa. Thank you to Sal this evening. Thank you to Linda. Thank you to Tony, who helped put us out front for a couple of days. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, working like a wild man down there in Australia right now. Thank you up there in Australia, my bad. And thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, providing an easy, open way to obtain progressive radio on the Internet since 2002 and never having sent a bill. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Get well soon, Mr. Stress. We're thinking of you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.